Welcome to the Grappling Grappling Rewind Podcast.
Welcome to this week on the Grappling Rewind Podcast. In this week's show, we're going to recap Fight to Win 112 in Fresno, California. We're going to recap Submission Underground 8. We're going to talk a little about the ADCC Asian Trials. And we're going to preview Fight to Win 113 in Reno, Nevada. As always on the show, I'm your host, Maine, joined with my co-host,
Emil.
How you doing, Emil?
I'm doing great.
Good to have you back.
Thanks, man. And I'm glad, as always, to hear Josh talking shit on air. That's always great.
Yeah, that's all I have.
I kind of miss hearing him, you know.
He just got a matchup on SAGC, the one we're going to do commentary
Hell
for
yeah.
in College Park, and he has the most "gonna steal your girl" face on his freaking poster.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
I was like, "How'd you send that in?" He went, "Oh, that's the picture I sent in." So let's move into some news before we get into all the recaps. Carpe Diem donated a sumo apron to Ishihara, and apparently that's like a $10,000 donation to the sumo thing. With Josh here, we used to cover sumo at a lot more frequency, and I'm a little out of my element here.
Yeah, I don't know much about the aprons themselves. I do know that it's a fucking big deal, and Josh was like posting about it on his Instagram and shit. So
I know it's a big deal, and it's really cool to see Carpe Diem like
stepping into sumo. Fuck yeah.
Keenan has announced that he's going to represent Globetrotters at Worlds, and Tex Johnson is also going to represent Globetrotters. So now that actually kind of confirms two things: that Keenan A has not found a team, and B, Tex actually is out of Unity. So both those are two kind of big pieces in news. It'll be interesting to see where both those guys end up. I also think it'd be really funny. I think of those guys, Keenan is a dude that could take the Worlds this year, and it'd be really funny to see him take the Worlds under the Globetrotters flag.
I mean, we have yet to see Keenan kind of break through at Worlds. Like, he can dominate.
I mean, he got, like what? We placed last year. Had he not gotten the weird call against Gaudio, he probably would have won the Worlds last year.
Yeah.
I think, honestly. So it's like, I think
it's close, yeah.
Yeah, he's real, real close to that. It wouldn't surprise me to see him win it. It would be, like, a big kind of moment, but it wouldn't surprise me. I just think it would be really funny to see him win under the Globetrotters flag,
yeah,
which is kind of like the flag of, like, we don't want you to register for IBJJF, so we'll register, so.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's free marketing for them, right? But yeah,
great just, organization.
Just losing Atos is, like that's a that's a fucking huge team to train with, you know?
Oh, yeah. And you also lose their bracketing stuff that they get, and you, like, it'll be interesting to see how this Worlds goes, but it's big news that he's now basically does have a team, in fact, and, yeah. In other IBJJF news, Tiny Proferio has tested positive for a banned substance, a steroid, basically, and she's accepted a 4-year ban. It sounds like she's going to appeal that ban, but she's not back till 2022, if that actually is a 4-year ban. That's a massive ban.
That's colossal, I know people have come back after 4-year absences, right? But, like, I think that's the exception to the rule. And, like,
oh, yeah.
I think for most people, that's, like, you know, effectively career ending.
I think she's young, though, so it wouldn't surprise me to see her come back in 4 years. And, again, but it's just a huge ban, and it's just really interesting. And it's been a year. That's why I really haven't heard a lot from her this last year, and it was kind of curious as well.
Oh, yeah, it's retroactive, so she
has... Correct. So she's a 4-year ban, but she'll be eligible in 2022. So it's a 3-year ban from now, currently, because it's retroactive for, I think, June of whatever, whenever Worlds were last year.
Yeah,
June of last year. So in other news, Seth Daniels was like, hey, welcome to Fight to Win. So I love that post.
I saw him jump in on that, and it's like, yeah, I mean, it's true, like, there's definitely, like, plenty of other promotions to succeed in. Like, we saw with Paolo, like, you know, thrive in
the UAJJF. Just couldn't do the Grand Slam events for UAJJF because they had the testing associated with them, and he was still banned under that. But, like, again, I've talked about it openly on the show. I really don't care. Like, I want to see you compete. I want to see you do your best shit.
Yeah.
And if your best shit is on some shit... I have a vested interest in this as a grappling analyst, as like a guy that watches and enjoys professional grappling. Like, it is not in my best interest to like campaign against it.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I come from. But it does suck to see her banned. I would have loved to see her versus Gabby Garcia this year. That was kind of one of the matches I was most hyped about for the women's division. So
yeah. We're
not going to see that. And honestly, with the age of Garcia, we're probably not going to see that ever at the IBJJF now.
Maybe.
Which is pretty disappointing, because that was kind of the changing of the guards for the heavyweight women.
Well, hopefully someone puts on a freak super fight and we get it.
Dude, so. I would love to see them in Fight to Win go at it.
Yeah.
So that's
if you're listening,
that.
Seth.
Yeah, if you listen, put that matchup on. Like, I will watch the shit out of that matchup. In other news, Polaris has won their qualifier. I absolutely love qualifiers, and I'm really happy to see that we had. And give me his name, Emil.
Nastassa Silviu.
Okay, that's way better than I was going to pronounce it. He's earned his spot into the next Polaris on May 10th. So that's super exciting. I love that they're running a qualifier. I love that they're giving a chance for people to get into their event that, you know, just didn't get the invite. So that's great. Any other thing else on that?
No.
All right. In other news, we got Kennedy Maciel, Cabrini's kid, back. He won the San Diego Open this weekend,
which is really great to see because he had a fucking nasty looking injury.
He got his shit broken. Yeah. Or he didn't tap to an armbar. Was it at Pans?
Yeah, it was recently.
It was at a major. I think it was at Pans.
It wasn't Euros, I don't think. I think it was Pans.
I think it was Pans. He got his shit broke or like
dislocated.
He got his arm fucked. Yeah. Like, he was on an armbar and he tried to like escape and he didn't, and then he got it cracked and didn't
and then
tap.
He tapped, right?
I don't think he tapped. I think what happened is the guy.
I seem to remember it being really stupid. Like he got let it get broken and then tapped or something.
Let it
like
get
that.
Broken. They kind of did. The other guy kind of like let it go, disengage, and then like he talked to the ref and then like made a determination that oh my shit's kind of fucked up, and then like left. Like left. It was like okay, so
right.
If you were gonna lose anyway, why'd you let it get broken? And again,
exactly.
At that top level, like he really wants to win, but so again, kind of a side point. We've talked about this at length before in a previous news segment when he got broken initially, but I'm really happy to see him
back and successful.
Yes, yep. And successful. Like he won the San Diego Open, which is again,
it's a big deal.
It is a pretty big
San
deal.
San Diego is going to attract all like
yeah.
The,
I was
the
just about to say it's only
people.
An Open, then I realized that the San Diego
yeah,
Open.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
like and I think San Diego of all maybe a couple, São Paulo and like Rio, probably is one of the stronger opens in the world. Now, given it's so close to Worlds, it wouldn't surprise me if it went either way. I bet you got a lot of guys flying into it to get the last amount of points that you need to get in there. But it also wouldn't surprise me if there's less guys because it's so close to Worlds.
Yeah, they
you
don't
want to
really
do like an open in the middle of your
get
Worlds
your
camp.
Finger fucked up or something.
Yeah,
and, like,
or you have guys
points.
That like I want to get that last big push before Worlds. I want to do the San Diego. So I could see that going either way. But regardless, he's back. He's winning. He's looking good.
You know, actually, I kind of want to talk about that for a second because, you know, we saw last week you guys talked about fucking Nicolas Mirigali tapping out Kanan Duarte, which fucking blows my mind.
That was crazy.
Right? And this brings up a really interesting subject, which is like the different philosophies of I'm going to train all the time at high level tournaments so that I never lose my edge versus the guys who just show up at the like
Mirigali.
Musumeci.
Buchecha nowadays.
Buchecha, exactly. Those guys, like, they disappear.
They
and
hibernate.
They show up and just fucking Thanos the shit out of their division. Like, it's interesting to see how people, like, the different perspectives on it. Because clearly, you can perform at the high level without taking every single fucking tournament that comes along.
But you also
see
a lot of guys, like, they're on everything and, you know, win the world. Like, on stuff. Like,
yeah.
It does go both ways, and so it's really interesting kind of the two different training philosophies of, like, you see a lot of guys like Malfacine and Buchecha, like, they've kind of won everything, so they don't really want to...
I feel like Hodger was like that, too, right? Like, I don't remember him...
A lot of the big, like, stand... But also, different era, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there wasn't
era.
A whole lot of other stuff to do, and they could do other majors and stuff, but, like,
yeah.
They weren't... I feel like back when they were doing it, there wasn't just the inundation of, like, other big events you could do. There wasn't as many super fights, for sure.
Right.
There wasn't as many, like, other big things you could be on.
You know, I'm gonna look it up. I'd be curious to see how many people Grand Slam versus how many people have won multiple Worlds. And
oh, that's curious. Interesting.
You know, like, I wonder if it's harder to... I'm sure it's really fucking hard to Grand Slam, like...
You gotta show up and like beat the top guys four times in the year and then win the fucking Worlds.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, yeah, the guys that win the Worlds if they also Grand Slammed that year.
Yeah.
That'd be an interesting study. So, I think you're the biggest Duarte fan on the team.
It just still boggles my fucking mind, like, that someone can just jump. Because we've talked about it a lot, and like a lot of people talk about how any of the fucking colored belts are. Like, not bullshit in the sense that, like obviously, if you're
from
a purple belt...
From a hobbyist perspective, yeah, they're bullshit. But
well,
like
not just that, but, like, you know, okay, winning purple belt worlds, winning even brown belt worlds, it's like, okay, you know, you've beaten other people that, like, may or may not be sandbagging, but, like, you can't sandbag at black belt. Like, no. you're just going up against people. So, like, there's usually a fucking lag of performance. Like, I think most people
until recently. We've seen a lot of guys, Mergali. I think, did Musumeci win his first year at black?
I can't remember.
I think so. But, like, we've seen a bunch of people win their first
just fucking
year at black.
Like, move and up and smoke people.
And I think nowadays, for those big teams, those big comp guys, the shift has gone from, like, you're not going to get promoted to black until we know that, like, you can go be competitive at black, as opposed to, like, in every other belt, you get the belt, and there's, like, potentially a lag time of, like, you getting good, getting into that belt, and getting becoming elite at that belt. And then brown belt, you're kind of held there, and then you go up to black, but when you're ready to kind of, there's no lag time at black belt for a lot of top guys.
Right. Yeah.
I think there was a podcast I was listening to earlier this week that was talking about that and said it far more eloquently than I did.
Well, yeah, I'm still surprised. That's all. It's crazy to see him fucking get up there.
But he looks so good. And you see a guy against brown belt, it doesn't necessarily always translate at the black belt level. And he has, and he's looked amazing doing it. So that was a giant non sequitur. I have some ADCC news here, but we'll talk about that in the ADCC segment later. I've already talked about Josh having a matchup on SAGC, and he has a stupid funny poster. Let's see. Henner Gracie was on Shark Tank, and I didn't watch. Did you watch it?
Hell no.
All right. He has the backpack thing that he invented, I think.
Cool.
Turns into a coat and a backpack. I don't know.
Cool, Henner.
Let's see. Let's talk about Jordan Burroughs versus Ben Askren. We didn't get a chance to talk about this last week because the matchup actually happened on Monday, and we didn't realize that it was a Monday matchup until after we recorded. Like, it actually happens today. Oh, we can't cover this because it hasn't happened yet.
Like how Ben Askren manages to funk roll just about any time he can get it. So, you know, even at colossally high-level fucking competition.
Burroughs ran through him.
Mm-hmm.
Aggressively.
Mm-hmm.
It was uncompetitive. like not even close uncompetitive. So I talked to Rob a little bit about this, about, like, why would you take that matchup? And he goes, and he gave a much better reason, a much longer answer than I'm going to give here. But it was basically, like, kind of wants to see where he stands, probably.
Yeah, probably.
But you know you're not going to win.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it puts a lot of eyes on wrestling. It's good for a lot of things, but it was just like, you kind of saw Burroughs, what I think, almost take the gas off at the second round.
Yeah.
Because you think in that first round, so basically what happens is Burroughs schools Askren in the first period, and then he needs one more takedown at the end of the first period in order to finish it and tech fall Askren. And tech falls in wrestling is basically you get enough points in one period for Beat the Streets is 11 to basically...
It ends the match.
You win the match on points. It's kind of like Third Coast Grappling does it. If you win, you get 11 points. The first person to 11 wins, but in wrestling, it's the first person up 11 points wins. So he could have tech-falled him in the first round, and then you see him kind of pull off a little bit in the second round, boom, shoots a double leg and gets the tech fall.
Yeah.
So that was that match. I mean, from a technical perspective, Jordan Burroughs is really fucking good and has an amazing double leg.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I feel like with wrestling, with, like, actual freestyle wrestling, like, that is a skill set that... You're like age is just gonna fucking ruin you.
It's speed.
Like it's speed and endurance, like drive. Explosiveness. Like it's not something that like, oh yeah, you're gonna like pull out some fucking technique on like
at
a
that
young
size. It's a young man's game.
Yeah, no.
Not really. I mean, a young man's game, but just like Ben Askren has gone and done something else for 10 years, and Jordan Burroughs is just
has
fucking
gone on and done something incredibly taxing on the fucking body. Right, like. Not just, like, anything, but, like, you know, you're putting on extra fucking mileage in MMA. So.
Oh, yeah, in a big way.
Anyway.
So, that was interesting. That match was a thing that happened. You should go back and watch it just because it's interesting. Other than that, he kind of ran through him. Let's see. Oh, in the final news for this week, BJ Penn is now out of the UFC, if you've missed it. He broke all sorts of records, being the most losingest fighter in the most losses in a row in the UFC before being cut. I think it's 7. Usually they cut guys after 3, but it's it's rough. Like,
it was time.
Say what you want about BJ Penn, but like it sucks to see a dude like a former world champion in MMA and jiu-jitsu like kind of fall the way he did.
Yeah, I think he just checked out. So anyway,
so that does it for news. Let's on to the recaps. So under a recap of Fight to Win 112 in Fresno, California, this event paid a total of $27,988 in salvage commissions and was headlined by Gabriel Arges defeating Mateus Deniz via decision, and that was Fight of the Night for the black belts. Where do you want to start with this
one, Emil? Start at the top, man. This is fucking hilarious. Like, Gabriel was doing a lot of lapel guard in this match, and he does, like, he's, like, inverted in the first minute and ends up, he's got this lapel guard, he ends up taking Mateus's gi top off. Like, I haven't ever fucking seen that. Like, just, completely off.
So I was watching the match.
Over the head, just like all of a sudden Mateus Deniz is shirtless.
So I was watching this match while doing dishes, because that's usually where I watch most of my jiu-jitsu, because I create an amazing amount of dishes. And I look at them, I'm doing dishes, I look over and I'm like, is this a no-gi match? Yeah. And that was my thought. I was like, wait, why is this gi? Wait.
Yeah.
I almost take his gi top off. So I rewind. I was like, that's what happened.
Yep. Yeah, so this lapel guard shuts down Mateus for, like, 5 minutes, man.
A good,
like,
portion of the match. Yeah. I was kind of impressed for how long he was able to, like, just really kind of tie him up.
Yeah, it was really shocking. And at about 7 minutes, Gabriel goes for a knee bar, and he transitions to straight ankle with an outside triangle. And, like, neither of those looked, like, really deep to the point where, like, Mateus was, like, reacting at all to them.
Well, they looked like, okay, if you could get him on a lesser guy. But it was like they're both not like super deep.
They weren't deep. But here's the thing, like, and there was another straight ankle lock after this. But while they weren't deep, that was like pretty much the only submission attempts like generated. Like,
right.
Mateus Deniz is like, he's such an enigma to me, because like he's one of those people that, like, you know, like, this goes back to the like elite outlier fucking thing. Like, he's elite, but like, sometimes you're just like, dude, what are you, like, why, like, he hasn't been able to crack, like, he has not made that last step,
yeah,
you know, to where he's, like, winning worlds or, you know, dominating.
But he's one of those guys that any moment in time could do it.
Right.
And you're just like, at any moment in time, if
like,
he's like, oh, he goes
flashes,
on this,
right?
He goes on this run, you're like, oh, one world, you're like, I can totally see that.
It's like he's being an inch away from choking out fucking the Hulk.
Barbossa.
Yeah.
Would have won worlds that year, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, he's so close, but he has performances like this where it's like, it's a little weird. Like,
yeah, it's a little weird.
I thought he would have taken Arges here.
Like,
that's kind of what I predicted going into this. Like, hey, Deniz, like a guy, world-class Arges, really, really good, don't get me wrong, but I felt like coming off the Craig Jones loss to Arges, like, he looked good, but like, Craig Jones typically has been a less controlling grappler. He's more of like a flash sub guy, but like,
yeah,
he kind of gets you in a rabbit hole and beat you that way. And then, so I thought Deniz would come in here and kind of like give Arges a really, he did give him a really tough match, but I thought we'd see more from him here.
Yeah, I don't know. So I seriously, like I said, he's an enigma. I don't understand it, but we got Tom Knox.
Sorry, it was a really good match, by the way. I enjoyed watching the match. It was not what I expected.
Right.
So Gabriel Arges just takes that.
Then we have Tom Knox submitting Angel Lopez by footlock. Nick Bourbon defeating Dennis Arbrejo by decision. Brian Moody defeats Bruce Tafoya by choke. Victor Hugo Cervantes defeats Eduardo Crema by calf crusher.
And that was submission of the night for the black belts. Dude, this was...
What the fuck was this?
It was like a Texas cloverleaf.
Okay,
But they both had black gis on, so it was really hard to tell.
It was hard to tell, but like, I literally have like a question written down in my notes, which is, what the fuck are the mechanics here? I don't understand this at all.
I love this sub. Is
it a calf crusher? Is that like an accurate description?
Yes, it is. So okay. it can be one of like... two or three things, depending on how you look at it.
I'm going to say, let's pause here, and you do this to me real
quick. Okay. So we're back now. Emil now better understands the sub. I fucking love this sub, dude.
Yeah, okay. I thought it would, like, I'm glad Maine did this and clarified this finishing motion to me. It definitely looked like a twisting motion, and I was like, this looks to me like it's putting almost like a heel hook type pressure on the knee.
And
in the
gi. It depending on where your hands go here, you totally can heel hook off the top position here. He doesn't do that. His hands are really, really low. But this, in other situations, this totally can finish with a heel hook. And even where his hands are, you can potentially rotate even more and start to twist the knee. It's kind of like a heel hook, but it's not. But with how he finishes here... again, it's really hard to see on the black and black gi, but if you notice, he has his hands right below, like, where the calf ends, and what he's doing, it looks like he's twisting
like
the leg.
Twisting and, like, pulling into his solar plexus.
Yeah, but he's actually rotating the leg to slide,
Basically, he takes the shin and puts it behind the calf.
Yeah, it's a calf crank. Yeah. He slides Eduardo's shin behind his calf. And then what he does, he's pushing pressure into it and pulling it through while he hips forward. You can also hit the knee bar off this too, but it looks like what finishes the calf crusher. And I absolutely love Texas Cloverleaf because it's legal in the gi. I think above brown belt for IBJJF because I think you can slice at brown belt.
What you did felt like a calf crusher to me. So, yeah,
there's a couple different ways to do it, but it's a beautiful sub. It's really cool to see. I wish they had different color gis on in this match, but they actually have two different camera angles here.
Yeah.
And I was super impressed because Fight to Win, typically, when they do the replays, if they have events that actually do replay for the subs, it's from the same camera angle that it was initially broadcast. But this event, both Emil and I figured it out. I was like,
yeah,
that's a different angle.
There's another submission, which we'll talk about, where they did a really nice angle cut to show the finish.
Yeah, so I'm super happy that Fight to Win's doing that now because there's so many things that, I wish I had another angle here. This, I had the other angle on the finish, and I was like, fuck yeah, that was awesome to watch.
Yep.
So next match we have, anything else on that match?
Nope.
Okay, next match we have Cole Franson defeating Shane Torres via armbar, and that was submission of the night for the black
belt.
So
they have two submission of the nights? Like, did you catch that? Like, maybe that's a typo because...
I didn't catch that until just now.
Yeah. Well, I watched this one, and it's just a near side armbar.
Yeah, he like, steps over... I mean, Cole steps over really well. Like, he almost steps over to, like, a triangle from and, like, is going to roll to his back and finish, but he just doesn't finish making the angle with the triangle, so he steps over with his leg onto the top of the other shoulder.
Yep.
And then just pulls the arm up, gets the armbar.
Yeah.
It's nice. It's a slick armbar.
Yeah, it's just a nice bread and butter armbar. So I imagine this is a... This is a typo because the Texas Cloverleaf was fucking something.
Was some dope ass shit.
So next up we have Albert Aguirre defeating Chuck Rooney by cross choke. Jox Hagen defeats Ray Ron by decision. Cliff Sabro defeats Art Vega by decision. Jonathan Smith defeats Jeff Shields by toe hold.
On to the brown belts.
Josh Cisneros defeats Dan Dykeman by bow and arrow choke.
Dude, Dan Dykeman walked out to "Can I smell your dick?"
Yeah.
Like, he had this this meme picture of it's the black lady going mm-mm, like that, and I was like, what? And I was like, I was trying to listen, like, what song is he walking out to? And it was "Can I Smell Your Dick?" And I was like, oh my god, like this dude was seven and two in Fight to Win, walking out to "Can I Smell Your Dick?"
I don't know what the fuck this guy's like plan was here. Like, Dan literally starts the match off by doing a flying guard pull.
That's what
no
he did
grips.
At Baltimore, too, against Malachi. Like, that's how he starts the match.
Yeah, he starts the match.
And he jumps at you.
It jumps, like, they're at the edge of the boundary, so they get reset in the middle with Josh standing and Dan on the floor in guard. And then he instantly gets his guard pass.
Dude, Josh is immediately
in a fucking tight armbar. Dan is able to hitchhiker out.
I was impressed with the hitchhike, by the way. I thought Josh had
it. I thought his arm was going
to
break.
Dude, because Josh is a sub guy. Like, Josh has sub of the year last year. He was a purple belt to Fight to Win. He's the dude that hit the teepee choke.
That put the guy unconscious.
10 seconds or something?
Like, under 10 seconds.
It was deservedly sub of the year last year for Fight to Win. He's now a brown belt fighting Dan Dykeman. And so he gets the armbar. I was like, oh, that's all she wrote. And Dan's able to get out. I was like, holy shit, that was super deep.
So Josh gets a sweep, and he just initiates a beautiful back tick. I mean, this is just like a fucking... soul stolen back tick. And he finishes with a belly down bow and arrow in like 90 seconds.
A really cool bow and arrow, too, because he's like almost like tripoded up. It's not a finish you see a ton from the bow and arrow. It was cool. Like, again, this is a fun-ass match. Josh Cisneros becomes the Fight to Win featherweight gi champion
at
brown belt.
Hell
so,
yeah.
Good match, fun match to watch.
Next up, we got Troy Everett submitting Mike Nelson by doors. This was fucking amazing. So
this was hilarious.
Mike does, like, you know, the jujitsu double leg that we're all guilty of doing, which is the, like, you know, falling to your knees with your head on the outside. And Troy just is like, cool. Scoops the head up, gets a nice arm and guillotine, and I thought this is where the match was going to end, but then...
Because Troy's good at a couple things, but Troy's real good at, like, arm and guillotine and darce. Like,
yep.
That's, if you see Troy, we cover Troy, I think he has the most matches in Fight to Win history.
Yeah.
Like, 18 matches or something. He's fighting for a belt next week. Like, on every other Fight to Win, nearly.
Yep.
He darces people.
Yeah.
That's what he does.
That's what he does, and, like, Troy's on the ground in guard, and Mike is able to pop his head out. So I was like, what? Like, I thought this was going to finish here. Weird. And I was like, okay, how does Troy get back to the Darce? And Troy just sits up and gets another fucking arm and guillotine.
Go back, and watch what Troy does here, because it's sneaky. Troy just he literally just
I don't think it's that sneaky. I think he just sat up, and I think Mike was just like being a little careless with his head. Like,
it was crazy. Troy just sits up.
He just sits up,
gets like a guillotine, and then rolls through for a Darce and gets the Darce.
Yeah, that's it.
And
boom.
Emil and I both on our notes went, he just sat up and got that.
Yeah,
look at that.
Yeah, exactly. So.
So congrats
to Troy.
Good finish. Next match.
We got Albert Tapia defeating Rey Yescas by heel hook. And that was...
That was fight of the night for the Brown Belts. I looked at my notes, and I was scrolled down into Submission Underground 8, and I was like, Gilbert Melendez wasn't on this card. Oh, wait, I'm in the wrong notes section. So
this was a really fun match. There's lots of rolling half guard and leg entanglements back and forth. And the end sequence is great. It's a 50-50 battle in the end. And Albert is triangled. And Rey is based up with his leg safely tucked underneath him. I was like, oh, you know, like, that's a fucking great way to pass. It's a good stability. And Albert just does this really fucking awesome, like, he tips Rey backwards and basically gets Rey's balance out from under him and is able to pull the leg out to get to an inside heel hook position.
This is a really cool, it was a quick match too. A really cool match. This is one I recommend going back and watching for like match study. It's just the transitions are good. There's no position where they kind of sit. It ends up in that nasty 50-50 heel hook position.
Which
and
it's just like a fucking gunslinging, like, you know, like shootout at that
point. You're, I think Craig Jones was on Grappling Central, I think this week or a couple weeks, within the past like 2 or 3 weeks. And he talked about 50-50 heel hook is really scary unless you're the guy that's better at 50-50 heel hook, then it's not, because you're going to win. And it was, I think this is what happened there, is you watch like them get into this danger 50-50, and then the one guy's like a little more comfortable with it.
Yeah, Albert's just a few steps ahead, and Rey has to tap.
Like, yeah, I really enjoyed this match. This is a really fun match. It's one I'm going to watch for like all the kind of intricacies of the foot battle back and forth. Because both guys were engaging, and again, I enjoyed this one.
So next up, we have Eric Rem defeating David Ramirez by decision. Ralph Alvarado defeats Daniel Isaka by decision. Frank Ruiz defeats PJ Montano by decision. Marty Robles defeats Eric Legarreta by crucifix choke.
And that was Submission of the Night for the Brown Belts.
So this, it's a little bit of a misnomer. It wasn't a crucifix choke. It was a fucking behind-the-back omoplata fucking crucifix choke, which is
technically a crucifix choke.
What? No, dude. I would much rather be put in a crucifix than whatever the fuck this you call this thing.
A behind-the-back omoplata, then get choked.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is like, rip your fucking arm out of its socket while you're getting choked unconscious. So,
dude, guys that can get here with the omoplata have some serious flexibility, but it's just such a deep position. You almost never see anyone ever escape from the position.
Yeah. You're totally fucked.
I've seen
this
point. A couple guys like be able to like change the angle and like roll through and get the arm out, but it's so rare. And it's usually when the guy like can't get around to get the back for the final choke. It is such a deep control. It's one of probably the most controlling positions in jiu-jitsu.
Oh, hands down. So what ends up happening here for the finishing sequence is it looks like Marty goes for a rubber guard on the far side, and Eric is basically doing kind of the wrong thing, which is I don't know if he's deliberately trying to defend this or whatever, but he tucks his arm by his hip. And so I don't know if he was worried about, you know, like that arm getting pulled across for, you know, whatever, like armbar
or triangle,
you know. So he tucks it in, and Marty is just like, cool, you know. He swings around, he gets into kind of a traditional omoplata position for a brief second, and Marty is now trying to face away, Eric is trying to face away, and Marty just keeps going behind the back to get to that kind of crucifix position, which just looks so excruciating because it's got basically Eric's arm like way far behind his back. And
you're getting omoplotted super hard, and now they're on your back.
Yeah, now they're on your back, and you know, it's just a simple yeah, exactly, single armed rear naked choke finish. Boom, done. It's a beautiful finish. Yeah. Definitely go watch this.
It's deservedly a fight of the night for the brown submission of the night for the brown belts. So
absolutely.
Moving on to the purple belts.
We got Joy-Ann Pendle defeating Jessica Arroyo by calf crusher.
And that was Submission of the Night for the Purple Belts.
Dan Cavazos defeats
Sean... You got like something in your throat there. It's killing me to listen to in my headphones.
Dan Cavazos defeats Sean Hamilton by heel hook. Nicholas Garcia defeats David Valdez by decision. Brian Molano defeats Andrew Thaxter by armbar. Art Hernandez defeats John Luke Sanchez by decision. Jose Barraza defeats Jamie Rodriguez by wrist lock. Gerald Richard Apps defeats Matt Foster by decision. Miles Martinez defeats Michael Baptista by decision. Michael Craddock defeats Pete Espinosa by decision. Henry Badillo defeats Mark Sasser by decision. Pablo Sanchez defeats Eric Ceballos by decision. Danny Castro defeats Chris Arias by decision.
And that was Friday night for the purple belts. Under the blue belt results.
Anthony Mula defeats Drew Milsarek by triangle. Monica Trimble defeats Janet Valenzuela by armbar. Vince Trevino defeats Abelino Espinosa by hammerlock.
That's a submission of the night for the blue belts.
Mike Zaremba defeats Oscar Soltero by Americana. Shivam Patel defeats Pete Sierra by decision. And Paul Elizondo defeats Amer Ruzan by decision.
And that's fight of the night for the blue belts. So fun event. Some great matches to go back and watch. Let's move on to the next one. So one door recap of Submission Underground 8. This is Chael Sonnen's organization. I'm happy that it's finally on Fight Pass because you can jump around really easily. You can replays are up immediately. They have, like, each round is labeled there. It have submission attempts. I like the format and the interface that Fight Pass has for grappling events because it lets you jump around really easily to, like, points of interest in matches.
Yeah, and I kind of see what Chael's going for in this, like, in this promotion overall, like, initially, I was like, I don't really get it. Okay, so obviously what Chael, I think, is going for here is he's trying to attract the MMA community into professional grappling.
Because typically what these events are is they run a fight the night before. And so they ran like an amateur, I think, pro-am event the night before. And then the next night, they run a jiu-jitsu-y, submission-only kind of tournament thing.
Right.
They also had a bunch of tag team matches on this. We're not really going to get into the tag team matches for this event.
I would say the outstanding feature of this promotion is that it's done in an octagon, right?
So it's cage grappling.
I do think that that's an interesting element. And actually, we did see that come into play in some of the matches here.
Yeah.
It absolutely changes the dynamic. It means that you can't try to escape shit by running out of bounds. You know, people who are good at pressuring can really do cage work.
Yeah, and
you're devastating.
Your cage wrestlers have in the Gilbert Melendez match.
Yep.
We saw Melendez repeatedly use and push Pat Haley up against the cage for pretty much the entirety of the match.
And it looked fucking miserable.
Yeah. So let's get into, you done anything else on the event?
That's it. The lighting was not so great.
It's always a little dark.
It's a little dark. But other than that, like I said, I like the cage. So
let's start off with a fun match. Craig Jones defeats Dennis Hallman via toe hold, and it's listed as 12 seconds of regulation.
That's generous.
I think I counted 9.
I was about 9.
If you count
from
the time the referee drops his hand to the time that Hallman taps, I counted 9, a generous 9 seconds.
9 fucking seconds. It was over immediately. Basically, Craig goes to seated guard, and Dennis Hallman gets to top half. And
he's top Z guard, basically.
He just leaps into what I guess generously could have been called a knee bar attempt, but he didn't have any of the leg positioning. And
he just moved.
He just moved.
Craig Jones went, I'm going to sweep. And then sweeps.
Not even, he just, it's kind of from the side, and he does that toe hold finish.
I was still talking about the passing thing.
Oh, yeah.
So Craig Jones kind of just knocks Dennis over, and then Dennis goes, I'm gonna do a heel hook on one of the best heel hookers in the world.
I think he was going for a knee bar, but yeah.
Well, he switches off from the knee bar a topside uncontrolled heel hook on Craig Jones.
Didn't have his knees pinched.
On Craig Jones's free leg.
Yeah.
He doesn't have control of the knee line in the leg and goes for the topside heel hook, which you're probably not gonna tap a competitive black belt with anyway, and you're doing it on Craig fucking Jones.
Yep.
Ooh. And Craig Jones goes, oh, cool, his hands are free, and he's not defending this toe hold, and locks his hands up for a toe hold, and then starts to turn the angle and taps Hallman.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it happens so quickly that, I didn't even get a good chance to see Craig's grip on this.
I recorded this on my phone. Just so I could, watch it over and to see, because it's just such a quick match. I wanted to be able to talk about it on the show.
Is it a traditional toe hold
grip? It's a straight-up toe hold grip.
Oh, my God. I can't. I was like, how did it tap so fucking quick? Now, granted, you're talking, I'm I tap instantly to fucking get a hold. So, like, I get it.
The thing is, he taps him really far out. Like, typically, to get a toe hold, at least on what we're seeing, the level of guys that Craig Jones typically fights in jiu-jitsu, usually see a guy, you have to rotate in and put the toes kind of like Josh has in the butt. And Hallman, he's able to tap Hallman from really far out, almost with Hallman's leg completely extended
straight,
still.
Yeah, looked totally
straight.
He had
some bend in his leg a little bit to definitely make the angle on the toe hold, but it seems like Hallman taps before Craig, like, actually turns the body and turns the foot at all,
you know,
which was really interesting.
I wonder, maybe he didn't have his leg flexed and then there was enough compliance before he reacted.
To actually finish on the foot itself.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not sure, but I mean, regardless, with Craig locking up that toe hold from that position, you either tap there or you tap once he's broken your foot. Like, there's really, like, with Craig in that position, there's not a whole lot Hallman could do at that point. Like, Craig's not a guy you want to end up with him on your legs in the first place. Better yet, him, like, going for a sub attempt. Unless Hallman were to completely identify it 2 seconds earlier and start to, like, running, escape out. And even then, I still don't think Craig lets the grip go.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I kind of saw this coming.
You kind of saw this coming?
I didn't see, like, I don't understand matchups.
I thought this was going to be a repeat of the Polaris match we saw with Craig Jones versus Jake Shields.
Yeah.
Where it was just like, you have a really good veteran MMA fighter with some good grappling versus one of the current elite grapplers.
At least Jake Shields, you know, he trains at Henzo's and he trains with guys who are really...
Hallman's a legit grappler, too.
Yeah, but I think there's a difference between, like, you know, being an excellent grappler and, you know, training with guys like fucking Gordon Ryan and like Gary Toney.
The other thing we see Shields taking a lot of professional jiu-jitsu matchups. Like, we've seen him on Sug before a couple times. We've seen him on Polaris. I think we've seen him on Fight to Win a couple times. Like, he does professional grappling matchups. I don't really see Hallman very, very frequently. I could be completely wrong.
Shields might have been on Kasai too, I think, at one point.
I don't recall.
But anyway,
he takes matches frequently, lot, yep. And so the Craig Jones matchup made a little more sense. The Hallman matchup, this is kind of what I thought the matchup was going to end like. No disrespect to either guy. It was just Craig Jones has the ADCC invite, tapped low. Like, he tapped Argus. Like, he's just an elite grappler versus a guy that right now is just not an elite grappler.
Yep.
So that was that match. It is 9 seconds, so it's worth your time. It's interesting to see the adjustments that Craig Jones makes. It's interesting to see him knock over Hallman. It's 10 seconds of your time. Go back and watch it. There are some cool little technical pieces there that I thought were interesting.
Yep.
So where do you want to go to next on this card?
Well, we just talked about him. Let's do Jake Shields versus Austin Vanderford. So Jake Shields takes this by decision, and this is the least escape time after 3 overtimes. It's just... You know?
Jake Shields is now the submission underground champ at that weight class. I think it's 185, but I do not recall. There's lots of wrestling and push. Not even wrestling, it's just lots of tie up and pushing.
Yep.
Into this match, and every time there's a takedown, they kind of immediately come back up, and that's the match. And then we go into overtime.
Unfortunately, the overtime kind of sets up the rest of the fucking main events here, which is just like,
yeah, they all end in overtime.
They're all in fucking overtime,
and
like,
I think the more I see overtime,
it's so fucking dumb.
It's boring to watch for me now.
It's not just boring. It's like, okay, so we've now spent time watching this weird escape thing. This is the EBI overtime rules,
which used to be great, but now I think it was great because it was new. And we've seen it, and it was interesting. Like, okay, guys get subbed and finished. But now it's...
What are we learning?
Very few guys get finished anymore from those positions, especially MMA guys.
Yeah.
Like, MMA guys, it's really rare to see a guy get finished in overtime. I mean, Fabiano Schroner defeats Matt Michio in their armbar in overtime. But we just don't see a lot of guys get finished in overtime. When they do, it's especially weird if you see a guy get dominated for 10 minutes or whatever the match time is.
And then win by fastest escape, which is just like... Oh,
it's just, it's a weird win weird win criteria for me, because it's like, let's talk about the Gilbert Melendez match specifically in this match.
Yes.
We saw Gilbert Melendez put on a really, really good match in regulation, like really active. Like, had he been doing Fight to Win, like, he handily takes that a straight decision.
Yep.
And he had good leg lock attempts, good back attacks. He was good pushing into the cage. He was doing everything that he was supposed to be doing. And then it goes to overtime. and you watch three overtimes, and he takes a decision via via least escape time in overtime. Yeah, three overtimes.
When we already saw all the information that we needed to about the match, right? Like,
it's just weird. It's we watch a regular jiu-jitsu matchup, and then we watch like a whole separate like matchup that really doesn't have anything to do with the first matchup.
Exactly. And like we've seen it before where like people will win by fastest escape who didn't even, you know, that handily got beat in the regular.
Oh yeah.
You know, and it's just,
yeah. I would rather see decisions.
I would rather see decisions
because also there's
I would rather be a fucking draw for that match. Like I don't,
yeah,
I, in terms of entertainment, in terms of what I get as a viewer, nothing gets added.
Yeah, no.
It's just, it's two tired guys, like...
It's two tired guys, especially in super fights. It's super... In tournament brackets, I kind of... EBI, like the old school EBI, I appreciate it. It's like, okay, like...
You need a decision one way or another in order for the tournament to progress. That, I get it.
And also, like, you have a narrative for your guys where it's like, okay, this guy's tired and he had to go two overtimes versus some guy that's fresh. It's like kind of creates a better narrative. It's kind of what Eddie initially intended for,
right?
Was like it creates this narrative where it's like you've watched this guy, you know, through trials and tribulations through this event. But for super fights, and we've bitched about this before, I think less on air than we are doing right now, but I've seen what I needed to see from EBI overtime to kind of be done with.
Yep.
With wanting to see, especially in super fights.
In super fights, it has no business being there. If you have a tournament, I think 2 minutes, capping it at 2 minutes is fine. And a lot of promotions are moving to that. Like, they're shortening.
Yeah, most of the stuff is 2 minutes. Is this one 2 minutes?
No, this one was 5 minutes.
Old school EBI rules, which is the 5 minutes. So you potentially have a 15-minute plus overtime after a 10-minute match. It's like, that's a really long match to watch two guys.
Yeah.
And, I'd much rather see, like you said, draws or decisions for super fights like this. Like, I enjoy how Fight to Win does this.
Yep. Like, I will say in this match, in the regular match, Gilbert uses the fence fucking amazing.
Dude, he's a good cage wrestler. He's always been a good cage wrestler.
Like, he gets Pat Healy, like, you know, his head. So Pat's in guard, and Gilbert just pushes him up against the cage, and that position just sucks. You're getting like completely squashed. Terrible.
You ever been squashed on the cage like that?
Nah.
Dude,
haven't done much cage work. I do know that the times that I have been like inadvertently pushed up against the wall during training or whatever, you know, you're not going to like tap to reset in the middle of a fucking round, but like those moments suck, dude.
You ever been ground? Have your face ground against the cage wall?
Nah.
It's terrible.
Are you okay, man? Sounds like you're talking from about experience here,
yes.
Personal experience.
Yes, yeah. I've done a lot of cage work. Not a lot of cage work. Let me calm down. I've done enough cage work to know it sucks a lot.
Okay.
Dude, but worst thing is if you have like MMA gloves on and you have your hands locked behind someone and behind their back and your hands are on the cage and they lean back and they like rotate their back, you get cheese grated with your hands on the cage.
Yum.
It is one of the worst feelings I've ever had in grappling. So,
I'm sure a lot of these positions sucked, so...
So this is honestly, I think of the main card matches, I think this is the one I enjoyed the most. I enjoyed the heck Craig Jones because it's Craig fucking Jones, and I'll watch that guy do whatever. But this match from a positional perspective, like Gilbert just had a lot of action. He looked good. We saw the entirety of the regulation match was a lot of fun.
Yep.
And he wins after escape time.
So Jake Ellenberger defeats Diego Sanchez by fastest escape time in overtime. Actually, this is an example. I think Diego Sanchez did a much better job in the actual match than Jake Ellenberger. So it's like, what, you know.
Yeah, I thought Diego was really dominant here. Like, he took the back. He had the back for a while in this
matchup. A long time.
And I always I always forget how good Diego Sanchez is.
Dude,
think about all those old school grapplers, Grappler's Quest matches he's in where he's in, like, absolutes. And, like, he went toe-to-toe with, was it Marcelo in ADCC or something?
I can't remember.
Like, dude, Diego Sanchez is a monster grappler, and he's a guy I would honestly love to see do more grappling as he kind of retires eventually from MMA, even though he's just coming off a win over Mickey Gall. He knocked you, like, dude, tough one, still out there doing it, still out there fighting, still out there winning against legit opposition.
Yeah.
So he looked good in this match, but again, he loses least escape time after three overtimes to Ellenberger.
Yeah. And then we have Fabiano Schreiner defeating Matt Mitrione by armbar in overtime.
Call him Mitrione.
Mitrione.
Matt Mitrione. Mitrione.
Mitrione.
Apparently his name is actually Mitrione.
Mitrione.
But he like changed it. He changed the pronunciation of it when he started MMA because he used to be called Meat Feet back in college. Because he was a football player. He was fast.
There you go.
So it's apparently changed the pronunciation. Now it's Mitrione now.
Yeah. So at least there was one finish in overtime there.
So this match happened. Scherner gets a kind of cool sweep, and then they go to overtime, and Fabiana Scherner starts one of the rounds in an armbar, and armbars Mitrione. He armbars from a really interesting position here. He kind of almost goes like belly kind of sideways to it. I thought he was actually going to go for like an omoplata at one point, but gets an armbar, and then Mitrione can't answer, and that's the match.
Yeah.
There were also like 5 tag team matches on this. Those we've covered those before. We're not going to cover them today just because they're kind of weird to watch. Not in a bad way. They're just, it is kind of out of the scope of stuff we cover on this show. It's there if you want to watch it. All available. It's all up. It's definitely an interesting rule set to watch. I think for me, it'd be something that'd be more fun to do than to watch, though.
Yeah.
So that does it for SUG 8. On to the next one. So on to our recap, and that is in the biggest air quotes possible of the ADCC Asian Oceanic Trials. I tried like hell to find any sort of footage, any sort of information on this event. We have a list of trials winners now.
Yep.
But I was super disappointed because I wanted to see how Robert Whittaker did. I want to see Rukaka Yuasa. I want to see what Lachlan Giles matches looked like. There was so many things I wanted to cover on this, like we did for the West Coast trials.
Yep.
And it was a lot of fun, but I can't find anything.
Yeah, I'm beginning to see a pattern here with the international trials for ADCC. It's just like,
dude, the European and the American trials are the only ones we've seen.
And even then, the second European trials were like super sparse.
Dude, the first European trials were really sparse too.
Yeah,
it was. They were both rough to watch. But yeah, so there's nothing out for this event. Men's under 66 kilograms for the Asian Oceania trials for the men. We have Kenta
Iwamoto
for the under 77 kilograms. We have Lachlan Giles for the under 88 kilograms.
77.
Well, under 77.
Right. Yep.
Lachlan Giles.
Yep.
Under 88. We have.
I see. Yep. Keller Locksody.
And under 99, we have
Jacob Maikun.
Yeah. On the over 99, we have
Dennis Roberts.
And in the women's under 60 kilogram division,
Rukaka Yuasa.
We did not have a women's plus 60 kilogram division for this event. I assume that's because there weren't enough registrations. ADCC does a thing that if there are not enough registrations for a division, they don't basically allow for someone to qualify into the bracket, into the main ADCC World Championships with that. That's also partially why the Kazakhstan event was canceled. The first Asian trials was canceled because there wasn't enough registrations for it, even though it was canceled a week out, which is kind of shitty to your competitors. If the divisions aren't big enough, you can't qualify, so I assume that's what happened for the women's 60-kilogram division. There's still 3 more invites to come in that division, and of all the divisions, that's currently the biggest division for invites.
Yeah, usually the other divisions have 1, maybe 2 invites left. So we have a very good idea of what the overall picture for ADCC...
Yes, we actually have a full 60-kilogram, under 60-kilogram division for the ladies.
This is arguably, like, I mean, all the divisions are stacked, but this is just fucking crazy. We have Bia Mesquita, Jenna Bishop, Franciel Nascimento, Livia Giles, that's Lachlan, oh, sorry, Giles, that's Lachlan Giles.
Yeah, former Livia Luchowska.
Rukaka Yuasa, Elvira Karpinen, Bianca Basilio, and Fionn Davies.
That's a dope division.
That's a fucking absurd.
And it's only
division.
An 8-person division.
Yeah.
Which is crazy because the ladies' divisions are always half of the men's divisions. And there's actually some talk about increasing the size. So there's 3 women's divisions or more women's divisions. But we'll see how long that takes to happen.
Yeah. You know, obviously, like, I want this to grow. But, like, also, I'm so happy with,
I'm
like,
super happy.
Like, this is such a fucking killer division.
It's
like,
such a good division. So, we have, I think, 2 more invites for the plus 99. But I feel like potentially Muhammad Ali is going to move up to that division. And then we have 1 more invite for under 99, 1 more invite for under 88, 1 more invite for under 77, and 1 more invite for under 66. So basically, I think we'll probably have 1 more round of invite. I know we're going to have 1 more round of invites probably in the next, like, I would guess, couple weeks, maybe a month. And then we will have those divisions, and we will do a heck of a preview for that one.
Hell yeah.
I'm so excited to be going to this one, man.
Yeah.
If you have not bought your tickets and you want to go, buy your tickets.
Yeah.
Like, I bought my tickets literally the day that it was announced for ADCC. I have my flights. Rachel has her flights. We're going together, so it would be great. ADCC 2019 is going to be dope. It's been produced by Fight to Win. This is the hypest I've ever been for an event.
Fuck yeah.
So hype. So that does it for our ADCC recap and quotes there. If you have videos and you know where I can find them, shoot me a DM on the Grappling Rewind Instagram or an email or wherever. I really want to watch this event, so please, please post it somewhere. So on to our preview of Fight to Win 113 in Reno, Nevada, right? Okay, so there's two different states here listed on Flow Grappling, North Carolina and UN. This is in Nevada, I'm pretty sure. So
it better be. I don't know what the fuck is going on there. All right.
So that happens on May 18th. Main event by a 215-pound black belt game match, Tanner Rice versus Kanan Duarte. This is going to be a tough match for Tanner Rice.
You know where I stand on this, man.
Yeah, you love Kanan Duarte.
Yeah, he's going to fuck him up. That's my stance. That's my hot take.
Tanner's a veteran black belt. Like, dude, is there a video of him going against Galvao at black belt like 2013? Like,
yeah, did he win?
He did not win.
Okay.
I'm excited for this. This should be good. This is a tough ask for Tanner and Kanan. Just got subbed by Margali.
Yeah.
First time he's got subbed at black belt, I think.
Yeah, he has shown weakness.
I mean, it's Margali. Doesn't really count.
I know. So, I'm just trying to build a narrative here, man.
On to the next match. We have a co-main event, a female flyweight gi title, Amanda Montero versus Karen Atunes. That should be a great match.
That'll be a fucking great match.
Super heavyweight black belt gi match. We have Bryan Tragg versus Ernest Mello. We have a 260-pound black belt gi match. Sam Rice versus Patrick Welsh. We have a 205-pound black belt gi match. Buddy Roberts versus Jason Butcher. 190-pound black belt gi match. Kevin Thompson versus Nicholas Green. Love seeing Nick Green. Hopefully, if he wins, he will do some sweet-ass breakdancing. We have a 180-pound black belt no gi match. Matthew... Why am I reading the names, man?
Temendong versus Shannon Kalos.
175-pound black belt gi match.
Arturo Espinoza versus Garrett Aldrich.
175-pound black belt no-gi match.
Jerry Hallert versus Dom Hoskins.
Dude, Dom Hoskins is right on Troy Everett's toes for like most fight-to-win matchups. I think he's at like 16.
Like high
or,
teens, yeah.
I think he's at 16 now, and Troy's at 19 or 18. So he's right on his heels. 170-pound black belt gi match.
Kaiser Sulbayev versus Chad Bingham.
135-pound black belt judo match.
Shalitha Ellis-Walter versus Jenna Van Witbeck.
130-pound black belt gi match.
Kelly Parati versus Gabby Romero.
I was just wondering when the judo was going to... I was like, where's judo, man? I want to see some judo again. And then there it is on this card. 185-pound brown belt no-gi masters title.
Vince Barbosa versus Troy Everett.
Oh, shit. I think Troy was first crack at a title after... almost 20 matches, so
Jesus.
That'd be exciting. Hopefully, Troy... actually, this should be a fun matchup. Vince looks good. Troy's look good. I'm excited for this. Let me move on to the brown belts. I think that's those are the only title fights on the card as of now, but it looks to be a fun card. Reno's fun. All the Cali cards... Right, Cali's not in Nevada, is it?
Nope.
Cali's not in California. Reno is
states.
Not in California. Man, dude, I'm having a rough day.
You're fucking... Yeah.
I'm off ibuprofen. Like, whew. So, looks like a fun event. It takes place on May 18th in the United States someplace.
Yes.
So, that does it for this week's show. Dude, everyone is ramping up hard as shit for Worlds. Like, it's all you hear about is just like Worlds, Worlds, Worlds. Oh, this guy, Worlds, Worlds. This preview, this Worlds, this guy.
Yeah, it's around the corner. It's at the end of May. So, shit, man. We are weeks.
It is upon us.
It is fucking upon us. Like,
Worlds is one of... Honestly, Worlds isn't as hard to cover as the Europeans, but because we usually cover like a larger depth of like bracket, usually cover like quarterfinals, and we cover up some like fun matches as well. It's just...
Yeah, because usually there's just... I mean, there's so much fucking entertaining shit going on, and then you'll even get like really like amazing shit popping off in the brown and sometimes even in purple belts.
Yeah.
So
we try to like touch on all of that, and that's literally why we have more people in the network. And we're going to be pulling through everyone. Like, hey, you're going to watch this division. You're watching Matt 6 right now. You're going to watch Matt 8. I'm going to watch Matt 15 through 18.
Like, yep. Yeah. We usually have to divvy it up amongst, like, three or four people because it's the only way to see it.
We've had a couple people, like, message us, like, hey, you should cover it like this. And we're like, I can't do that.
Yeah, we're not omniscient, man.
That's physically impossible. So if you have good ideas for how we should actually, like, break this down between the five of us, let us know. But it'll be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to Worlds coverage this year. Now, especially since we've been doing the show for multiple years now, it's cool to see. We've seen guys that we were covering a little bit as brown belts now moving to the black belts. We see a lot of guys. Like I understand the narrative of the World Championships a lot better this year than I did last year. I have a better appreciation for it since we've been doing this show.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's cool. So, dude, we got some cool events ahead of us. Coming up in the end of May, we got... Sogi 2, we got Polaris 10, we got Finishers 9, which I'm thinking I'm going to be able to get to go to up in New Jersey. We have Combat Jiu-Jitsu Worlds, which we finally have a full events list out for. Then we have a host of other events coming down the pipeline. And then Heavyweight Grand Prix is down in August. I'm looking forward to this. I'm fun. It's been a tough week so far. Yeah. It's Monday. I'm already slurring my words super hard. So, you got anything else, Emil?
We got to get you fucking some lessons on geography, my friend, and what constitutes a state versus a city.
Let's start with pronunciation first. Like, let's do some, like, basic reading comprehension and, like, not reading the first three letters of a name and moving on. And, like, this is how you sound out words. Let's do that first before we tackle geography.
I ran into one of your students, actually, randomly at the bar this weekend. Chaz?
Yeah. Not really a student, but
he's a professor,
guy that trains with us.
Yeah. Absolutely.
We're everywhere, Emil.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, just finished Hopkins and finished some promotions, and it's always cool to see like the students like be with the club a couple years, like get a belt, maybe get a couple stripes, and then like move on to bigger and better things beyond my purple belt ass coaching.
Yeah.
So I was like, where should I go? It's like, you should go with someone. You should find like a real gym with like a real instructor and like a real curriculum and go there.
Yep. Yeah, it's just cool. Yeah, we are everywhere. And I also ran into another person who's visiting from San Diego. He trains with Dean Lister. So it's just,
sweet.
It's fucking crazy. Like, jiu-jitsu has proliferated. And I was talking with them about how much it's proliferated. It's all the fuck over the place. I remember, like, you know, I'm basically one jiu-jitsu generation removed from when people had to train under, like, blue and purple belts. Like, you know, it, like, that was their only option.
Yeah, dude, when I started in Maine, like, I was 6 months away from starting when the head instructor was a brown belt still.
Yeah.
Like, legit brown belt, don't get me wrong, but, like that's, we are of the first generation, I think. The guys coming in now are the first generations that are coming in where it's, like, you train under a black belt.
Yeah.
Because, like, there's enough black belts now to go around.
Yeah. Small cities will have them, like big cities will have many black belts, you know. Like,
oh, yeah. It's got to be 35 black belts in Baltimore alone.
Yeah, oh, easily. There's 5 at Baltimore BJJ.
Yeah.
You know.
There's multiple at Form. There's Ground Control has some.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know, then you move, like, into Virginia area. You got, like, all Yamasaki. The DC ones. Yamasaki 50-50.
Yeah.
You got all the TLI guys. Yep. They probably have 20 at least there alone.
Yeah. 100%.
So, there's enough black belts to go around now. So it's cool. It's a different time, but it's a cool time to be.
Yeah, it's cool to run into people and have that to talk about. So,
anything else, Emil?
That's it.
All right, as always, I'm your host, Maine, joined with my co-host,
Emil.
And we are the Grappling Rewind. We'll see you on the mats. If you like the show, please consider sharing it on Facebook with the folks at your gym. It's the best way that we grow the show, and we really appreciate it. You can reach out to us on email.
We also have Instagram. We have Facebook. We have Twitter. We have Google Plus.
Until that shuts down.
We have a website.
If you have an event you would like to have us cover, please let us know. If you have a name, like most people do, and you'd like to have us stop butchering it,
let us know.
Reach out to us. The show is also available on YouTube, Spotify, in addition to iTunes and every other podcast service. We very much appreciate your time, and thank you.